because the law of the interdependent co-origination is a combination of conditions, and where instead of because they are connected by one word when. So we deal with that very powerful factor of time, when. Sometimes it is described by the word coincidence. When two things coincide in time, one conditions the other in one way or another. That is the essence of the law of interdependent origination, where the when the origination is secondary to and derivative from interdependence. You got it, yes?
I'm just starting to get in the zone to like listen. Actually, I'm getting in the zone to listen right now, so I wasn't really paying attention there.
Yes, please, you know, but now let me repeat it to you again. If it were easier to understand, I would have never come here. Well, there is no reason to teach students easy things. Well, easy things they can understand without any help from a teacher, yes. And the most effective teaching happens when teacher himself does not yet understand entirely what he is talking about the student, and demonstrates to them his what process of understanding. You understand that? Such teaching is most effective, because students see in their teacher the process, the fact, the event of understanding. But it's very difficult to achieve. Now, one step further, and I will give you one other example, which is chosen by Kondze and by another great Buddhologist of the 19th century, de Levallois-Poussin. Yes. Now let us imagine that somebody somebody has been killed by a bullet. By the way, get attentive. Somebody has been killed by a bullet. We may say, well, we may start our understanding of the law of the interdependent origination from this very fact. Somebody is killed by a bullet. Yes, it's very simple, isn't it? It happens, yes. It happens very often, not by the bullet, by a spear, by a sword, yes, by atomic bomb. So for the last, my suggestion is 10,000 years, the humans didn't practically do anything but killing each other, sometimes with great pleasure and satisfaction. It is our usual preoccupation. To kill or to be killed, yes? I'm quoting from another Buddhist text. But that, as it were, simple fact of murder is in fact coincidence in time. Or shall we say, it happens when several conditions come together to produce the final effect in the form, in the visible or perceivable or sensible, that is, gotten by organs of sense, the sensible presentation of murder, as as it is presented in the court, reports, in the newspapers, etc., etc. So, but it's actually impossible to take into account all those conditions, because it may be accounted by the fact of his being at that time and in this place, at the moment when bullet, yes, was flying towards him. Or we may say another condition, that there was nothing between his head or heart and that bullet. But, you know, this is not enough to explain this fact in the light of the law of the interdependent origination. Now, some other factors may take part in this event as conditioned and conditioning factors. For instance, from the Buddhist point of view, such factor as karma, yes, may well play some important role in that disastrous event. Isn't it strange? Which means that the poor chap happened to be at that time in that place just when murderer, press the trigger, yes. But it may find its explanation in his karmic past, yes. That is, in one of his previous reincarnations, there was a murder when he killed another man. And after very many rebirths, the karma passed through various stages. His karma, the influence of that evil action of his, was matured enough to produce its effect in one of his future incarnations, at exactly at the time when there was a revolver or automatic in the hand of another bastard who was going to kill him, yes. And so it goes on indefinitely, yes. At the same time, we may say, and it is very relevant to the Buddhist philosophy of time, ladies and gentlemen. We were always speaking of what coincidence and time. As I have already told you, the minimal unit of time is the time during which one dharma of consciousness or of thought lasts. That is practically a moment, kshana in Sanskrit, infinitesimal or 164 billion section of a second, yes. But, you know, that idea of time as a time of coincidence in one or another happening, in one or another event, ladies and gentlemen. It is indeed one of the central points in Buddhist philosophy in general, their philosophy of time. By the way, you may compare the Buddhist philosophy of time with its opposite. Who was a philosopher in the... which philosopher in the 20th century wrote a book about time? Einstein. Sorry? Louder, please. Oh, no. He was thank God, yes, theoretical physicist. No, it was famous German philosopher Martin Heidegger, who wrote a book, Being and Time, yes, Sein und Zeit. And for him, the time was the time of being. But in Buddhism, and in the sense of the law of the interdependent origination, there is no being. Instead of being, we also have that accursed, we will be repeating it dozens of times, idea of when. When. Time in Buddhism is simply when, because there is no being in Buddhism. Nothing is being. Everything is becoming. Everything changes itself in the various configurations of interactions of millions and billions of conditions. So time is here the time of when conditions coincide. At that very moment when the poor chap has been killed. So it is the time of that coincidence, yes?
I'm pretty sure I understand your time frames here, but I'm curious about if...
A bit louder, please.
I'm curious if you need, in the realm of karma, if you committed a crime,
yes,
in a past life,
yes,
do you, in this, there was a crime that was committed in a past life, and then she lived as a calf, and then as paying for that crime.
Yeah.
Right? Do you have to pay back all of your karma before you can transcend the wheel of karma?
Oh, splendid. It is a very interesting moment, your friend, and splendid question. You know what it is? There are two conceptions about that. The first conception. By the way, let me tell you one thing, and try to remember it, because it's very important. Bad karma is not, cannot be redeemed by good karma. They exist independently for one sentient being. So, if you committed a very bad action, for instance, if you killed somebody, don't you think, please, my friend, that if you will save somebody else's life, that will make a balance of your good and bad karma? No. Because there are three karmas: good, bad, and indifferent or neutral. And just at the threshold, that is what you wanted to say, of your transition into the state of unconditioned and akarmic, non-karmic nirvana, yes, all your different karmas must be neutralized. Not put in balance, but neutralized. And sometimes it takes minutes, and sometimes it takes billions of years. But, you know, Buddha, in one of his most famous sutta texts, Mahaparinirvana Sutra, says, "My pupils, remember, now you see the last moments of the existence of karmic effects before they got altogether neutralized, because now I'm going to pass into nirvana, and I will go there with the karma totally neutralized." Yes?
How does it become neutralized?
it becomes neutralized on the first factor of neutralization of karma is knowledge. Only when you have already understood all causes and effects of all doings, when all your doings are undone, yes. But that cannot be achieved by the willpower. What is absolutely necessary is the highest knowledge, or prajna, prajna. Only prajna starts neutralizing the karmas, making gradually all of them neutral. And it is in one of the commentaries on the law of interdependent co-origination, the great Buddhist commentator, Sri Lankan commentator, Buddha Ghosha, he says, well, but you cannot achieve that highest knowledge. It is not knowledge, like knowledge of history or mathematics, yes, or linguistics. It is a totally different knowledge which has a yogic character. It is a meditational knowledge. When you not simply learn something, but when your learning has already changed into your meditation upon something. And so, let me quote from that philosophical text by Buddha Ghosha. So, Buddha Ghosha continues, the first stage of that yogic meditation brings about the predominance of good karma over bad karma. The second stage brings about the complete disappearance of all bad karma. The next stage brings about the disappearance of birth, good and bad karma, and the appearance of neutral karma. And the last stage is marked by disappearance of all karmas. Why is that so? In the light of the law of interdependent origination, it is very simple. Because when karma is neutral, it brings about no effect. It is not any longer cause or condition of something else. You understand that? Neutral means not producing any effect, not being cause of anything. Such is the meaning of a Buddhist term, neutral or indifferent, abhyakata in Sanskrit, or tavara avakrita. Yes, literally it means not doing or not producing anything, yes?
I remember in the reading, I think it said something along the lines of all our past lives might actually have been at the same, like, might not actually have been past, but they could be happening at the same time.
Of course, because it depends on what is when, in double quotes. In one or another case. What is, sometimes when is elementary. Sometimes in when the past and present and future may become merged. And you cannot single out in that when what was the day before yesterday or 143 years ago. What is now and what will be after the, what, well, Third World War, or sorry, Fourth, I suppose. Or say something like 73 and a half World War, yes. Everything will merge in one when, in double quotes. And it applies in the first case to karma. And never forget one other feature of the law of interdependent origination. That very often its various links seem in its character very, very indefinite. By the way, come to think of it, ladies and gentlemen, how often we are using indefinite notions and categories. For instance, how are you today? Yes, well, the most indefinite, not to speak idiotic question, yes. But not meaning to have any sense, yes, sir. And I say, I'm quite well, thank you. But that well may contain thousands of various conditions, some of which are fateful or mortal, some of which are, well, auspicious and good and pleasant, and some of them are, what, neutral. Neither good nor bad. As I told you the last lesson, yes, that 99.9%, according to the Sri Lankan school of Buddhist philosophy, of our actions and circumstances and conditions are neither good nor bad. They do not matter. Like my gesticulation now does not matter. As your blinking now while looking at me, yes. Like all the time spent on food and sleep, yes, well, that's what we are doing. But it is not a real doing, yes. But at the same time, each and every irrelevant smallest action due to what? Circumstances and coincidences of various dharmas according to the law of interdependent origination may become very important. Yes, sir?
I was just wondering, I guess it's the separation between, or maybe that's a flaw in thinking of a separation between an action that's...
Between what?
An action that's indifferent and an action that has some sort of substance, like blinking my eyes. I'm wondering, within all this, where... if there's an account of volition or anything like that.
Yes, yes. It may be one thing just as well as another thing. That is here where, again, it is a stumbling block. It is a matter of knowledge. You can be definite about something. Only having a definite knowledge of something. For instance, it was said in the Parinirvana Sutra that a person who knows the karmic or any other, with karmic, strictly speaking, means simply, well, interacting in a certain way, which is called karmic. And when and if you finally know whether, well, my grimace now has a karmic effect or has not, or my looking at you, sir, yes. But the thing is, again, that implies a yogic training. That implies that a highest degree concentration of consciousness, or in Buddhist terminology, samadhi, yes, when you are aware of the minutest action in your body, speech, and mind. Then that action by definition becomes what? Neutral. If it is known, it is neutral. Our actions are karmic or simply bad or good or murderers or murderous or disastrous only due to our ignorance. And ignorance is dismissed, then all those actions have already lost their connecting power, their power of being, of being simultaneous with other actions, yes?
So no event contains or...
Splendid, old chap, splendid. Now we are coming to one of the last points of my lesson today, due to you, sir, to wit, that in the Buddhist philosophy, the thing as such, yes, is neither good nor bad. It is as such it is always neutral. Because your things, your circumstances become good or bad, or your actions, good or bad, only provided that they coincide, that is when, interact with good or bad, what? What? Exactly. Good or bad thought. And yes,
so by that definition is Buddhist philosophy itself, neither good nor bad?
Absolutely. So there are schools, in the Mahayana Buddhism in Tibet, which started with that idea that in the final analysis we may regard the whole phenomenon of Buddhism as absolutely neutral. Neither good nor bad, because Buddhism is about, as a philosophy, is about what there is, not whether it is good or bad. It's a quick constatation of bare facts, and bare facts cannot be good or bad. They are facts. And only after that, when you start analyzing them, you may find in what sense it is good and in what sense it is bad. And so we are coming to our last example today. So, our previous example is, suppose the guy has been killed, yes, but next example is, suppose that the guy has killed somebody. It is a different example. Why it is different? Try to think about that. Now this thing is that on this level, on the level of the law of interdependent origination, this in the sense of worldly conditions, not in the sense of the unconditioned, they are different. Only in the sense of absolute level of the unconditioned, they may be regarded in a way as the same, but not yet, it is not now, not today. So, it is one of the, shall we say, riddles in the Buddhist philosophy. So the main difference between the chap has been shot and the chap shot somebody, the main difference, not legal difference, yes. The main difference is that the second example presupposes, from the point of view of the law of interdependent origination, presupposes what? First of all, that the chap who killed somebody was totally, what? Ignorant. It is a negative aspect. Or shall we say negative condition to be ignorant. Dumbfucked, as Konze used to say. Yes, that is absolutely imbecile, yes, because only imbecile can kill, you know that, yes. When somebody kills, your first thought must not be such a cruel man, yes. He's against humanity or other rubbish, yes. The first thought about him must be a complete idiot. Completely ignorant man. Yes.
But the woman who pushed the man off
at that time, she was ignorant. But the next time, due to that action of her, she became awake. But sometimes that such ignorant acts may serve as what? Preparation. as one of the conditions of enlightenment and awakening.
Could you think of it that the lives are happening at the same time?
As what?
If all the lives are happening, if all of the previous and future lives are happening at the same time.
Yes.
Can you consider yes. as the only one that matters?
No. The picture which you so beautifully presented, by the way, you may find it in some of the Tibetan Buddhist mandalas, the combination of all times. With one event, and of course, that can happen only in the sphere where there is no ignorance. Because ignorance is limited by and connected with and interacts all the time with conditioned actions and is itself a most powerful conditioning factor. So that picture, by the way, you may find it even in the poem of great Tibetan yogic poet Milarepa. Such fantastic picture, yes. But that is usually accounted for by a special yogic training in the process of which such pictures are produced in one's highly trained yogic mind. And of course, such a picture as that presented by you may exist in a yogic imagination, and such factors as ignorance, they do not work anymore. At that time, let me stress it, only at that time. Now, but let me finish with that second example, because, sir, we may say that if somebody has murdered or shot somebody else, the first condition of his doing so is ignorance. But it is a purely negative condition. Or literally, he does not know and did not know that, yes, etc., etc., etc. But such a killing can never can never have place without one other condition, which is what? Not negative, but positive. That. In order to kill or to murder, one must have, apart from being idiot, yes, we have already thought of killing. Yes.
I'm curious about temple guards from like Buddhist temples.
Yes.
There's highly trained Buddhist monks.
Yes.
Who were trained to kill.
Yes. Oh, well, you know, we will come to the Mahayana yoga, where there are very many interesting things. They were trained to kill, but it was not a killing in our sense of the word, because it has direct connection with what I was going to say now. Because in the sense of the law of the interdependent co-origination, that chap who just now killed somebody in the first place must be ignorant. One condition, yes? Say, factor, conditioning factor number one. But that factor may coincide with what? With the positive factor of his having a thought of killing. Because as the Buddha used to say, killing without thought of killing is what? No killing at all. For instance, when you are, I'm quoting from one very old Buddhist text, you are tramping on the street, you are killing myriads of what? Insects, yes. And other living earthworms, yes, my lady. but without any what? Thought of killing. And so if one kills absolutely inadvertently, yes, unawares, it is not killing in Buddhism. It is not killing in Buddhism. And never forget that absence of awareness is not idiocy. It may take place due to very many factors. But we are not speaking of purposeful absence of awareness induced by drugs or alcohol, yes, or induced by passion, yes, etc., etc., etc. Because it is equal in bad consequences to the thought of killing. Now, let us pass to the last moment in the law of interdependent origination, this law, the last moment, which was in some Buddhist schools regarded as the central. The last moment is era. Some place in a merely abstract philosophical sense. There are some places where the law of interdependent origination has no strength, has no power, with all its 12 links. And one of such places is, for instance, Nirvana. Why? Well, it is, we may say that too, but the main thing is that there is no consciousness in Nirvana. There is no consciousness. Because the ground, the, shall we say, soil, the ground for the action of the law of interdependent origination is your consciousness. There can be no killing without your consciousness. No killing without your thought of killing somebody. And if there is nothing to think about that, then there can be no either killing somebody or saving somebody's life. Because the world where the law of interdependent origination operates is the world, the cosmos, the universe of consciousness. And more than that, the last moment, how much time left? Sorry?
1 or 2 minutes.
Splendid, yes, more than enough, yes. And the last point, what has the law of interdependent co-origination with its 12 links was, what has it to do with the cosmos as it is? As it is. That is, using the words of Blaise Pascal, with unthinking cosmos. But remember, in Buddhism there is no such a thing as unthinking cosmos. And there is no such a thing as creation, because the consciousness as well as the thought is eternal from now to eternity and from now back to eternity of the past. The consciousness as the whole has no time. But the consciousness as my consciousness arises due to the law of interdependent origination as a third link from the initial ignorance. So again, we may say that the whole universe is uncreated in Buddhism, but we can talk about it only because it is in our mind. Can you talk about something which is not in your mind? You can't. And never think it is a kind of idealism. It is not an idealism. Philosophically speaking, it is closest of all to which teaching of the European philosophical teaching? Oh no, I think to the teaching of a classical English empiricists, Berkeley, Hume and Locke, and only partly to Immanuel Kant, the great German philosopher Immanuel Kant, only partly. So for the time being it is enough with the law of interdependent origination or pratitya samutpada. Now, ladies and gentlemen, be so kind. I see you are deeply dissatisfied with the fact that you do not do any homework. I see it written on your faces. But you know, try to think it over. Because do reread a few pages from Sutta Nipata about the dialogues, yes, in the Sutta Nipata, the first pages about the Four Noble Truths, and please start thinking upon your first tentative essay. Yes, doesn't matter how many pages. Please, no more than 20, yes, if possible. And no less than 4, okay? By hand, or in computer, yes. Or 3, okay. So, please try to single out from other content of those texts that which speaks about yoga. In the dialogues in the Sutta Nipata, in the third sermon of Buddha, in the Sermon of Fire, try to find yogic places and yogic terms and make a shortest summary, simply writing, yes? We know about yoga from this first text, that is from our page 1. Yes, but don't touch again these pages from Konza's article on causation and the law of interdependent origination, that is 18 to 25, because there is not much about yoga here. So do that, please, and next time I will provide you with more texts. Thank you for your enlightened attention.
Do you have office hours tomorrow?
Sorry?
Do you have office hours tomorrow?
Undoubtedly.
Yeah.
Dead or alive.
Right.
Oh, please, I was yesterday too.
Okay.
Yes?
Well, can I get your signature?
So please do come.
I can wait, or it doesn't work.
Do come tomorrow. You will be absolutely welcome.
Yeah.
Good.
I gotta go to the library, gotta go to Gord. Yeah. I would like to meet the form.
What about very early dinner?
Yeah, sure.
4:45.
When is it open?
4:45.
Are you serious?
Yes. So I discovered for myself yesterday.
Yeah, sure. Okay. Has it?
I think you could. Undoubtedly.
All right. was a very affirmative response. Like,
oh, well, here, sorry. Here.
Yeah.
And here.
Right, yeah.
John,
please.
Yeah, get
счастье. Как хорошо, что сегодня пришли.
Выключите.
Сейчас, выключу.
А он не был выключен.
Я включил его сейчас, он был выключен.